Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording from our September 17th service. Our new minister, Kate Laurie, her first sermon is I Bring My Spirit to the Sea. The music following the sermon is Across the Vast Eternal Sky by Ola Jalo, performed by Pat Rogers. Thanks for listening.
Our reading this morning is entitled The Sound of the Sea, and it's by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. The sea awoke at midnight from its sleep, and round the pebbly beaches far and wide, I heard the first wave of the rising tide rush onward with uninterrupted sweep. A voice out in the silence of the deep, a sound mysteriously multiplied, as of a cataract from the mountain side, or roar of winds upon a wooded steep. So comes to us at times from the unknown and inaccessible solitudes of being, the rushing of the sea tides of the soul. And inspirations that we deem our own are some divine of foreshadowing and foreseeing of things beyond our reason or control. It's a perfect day, 72 degrees with a soft, warm breeze. Wispy white clouds dance in the sky above me, and clusters of sanderlings scurry on each side of me, playing tag with the waves. But it's not them, but the sound of the wave that has my rapt attention. I love the sound of the waves, the way they seem to emulate the breathing of the earth itself, sometimes short and shallow, sometimes long and deep. And I love the way they help me notice the rhythm of my own breathing, in and out. I want to memorize this sacred sound, I tell myself. I want to infuse it in my being so that I can summon it at will when I'm 1,200 miles away. It's 1983, and I'm at Asilomar Beach, one of my favorite of all the gorgeous beaches of my hometown of Pacific Grove, California. Perhaps some of you have been there. And the reason why I'm standing on the edge of the water on this perfect summer day is to say goodbye to the Pacific Ocean before departing for New Mexico. My new husband, you see, has begun studying acupuncture there, so I have to move far away from the sea, and I've never lived away from the ocean, so I don't know how I'm going to make it. A tear trickles down my cheek. As I taste its saltiness, I am reminded of the obvious, that I am made of the sea, that she's already in me now and forever, and that as long as I have the capacity to cry, I will always have a physical reminder of my evolutionary and my spiritual connection to the sea. Still, leaving the sea is hard. You see, I consider the Pacific Ocean my other mother, my source of comfort and wisdom when life brings me to my knees, and she knows all my secrets. My friends know that I am struggling with this move and have tried to be encouraging. Oh, you're going to love New Mexico. And when you look out over those vast arid distances, it will be the same. It'll be just as soothing and just as effective as connecting you to wisdom. I hope you're right, I tell them, but I know, like you, that they are wrong. It won't be the same at all. Still, I'm a grown-up now, a recent college grad, so I try to be a good sport about it all. I moved to New Mexico, and although my ache for the sea never ebbs, I learn to love it there, the resilient beauty of the high desert life forms, the mix of indigenous, Hispanic, and Anglo cultures, and of course, the art. Art is revered in New Mexico, and it infuses each day with beauty and possibility. So I want to be clear, although I'm away from the sea, I am happy living there. I find new friends and enjoy managing a local health food store, and 3 years into it, I have my first child, Nathan. And I smile as I realize that he has taken shape in a saline solution, and that he has spent part of his time in utero sporting a fishtail. Ah, the miracle of evolution. So, no, I'm certainly not suffering. It is, in fact, a happy time in our lives. But man, oh man, are we poor. Since giving birth to my son and my husband's graduation from acupuncture school, we're discovering that competition for acupuncture jobs in New Mexico is rather fierce. And so I am relieved when I get word that Oregon has just made acupuncture legal. It was a radical act back then, and that there are good job possibilities opening up in Portland. Hallelujah, I exclaim to myself. Finally, we don't have to be so poor anymore, and I get to live by the sea. Or at least I thought I was. You see, I've never been very good at reading maps. And it wasn't until I had moved, flown into Portland, that I realized that the sea was 80 long and winding miles away. Why didn't you tell me Portland wasn't at the coast? I asked my husband. Well, it practically is, he said, and I promise I will take you there at least once a month. But hey, Roger was from Cleveland. How could he possibly know that living an hour and a half from the sea is not at all the same as living at the sea? He couldn't possibly understand the extent to which I need to hear the sound of seagulls bickering over food and to smell the tang of beached seaweeds. And how could he ever grasp? But there's nothing, absolutely nothing that feeds my soul like being in communion with the sea. But once again, I try to adapt and be a good sport. So I move to the harried, gritty urban life of Portland. Our second child, Everett, is born 3 years later. And I have to tell you that my husband was good on his word. He did take us to the sea once a month, at least while the kids were young. But as the years progressed and our lives got busier, those trips became every other month and then just a few times a year. And by the time our marriage ended in 2006, I was usually going to the beach by myself or with girlfriends. The last trip Roger and I did make together, though, was to discern whether or not we really wanted to go through our divorce. Perhaps you can picture us. Two middle-aged folks sitting in the sand and quietly weeping, both from a sense of gratitude for 25 years of marriage and also from the sorrow of knowing it was all coming to an end. And in the background, almost imperceptibly, the ocean is whispering, "All will be well. All will be well." And you know what? She was right. The divorce was a difficult but wise choice. And 2 years later, I married Gary, the love of my life. Now, I want to acknowledge that I'm taking some artistic liberty here. Of course, the ocean doesn't really have a gender, nor does she actually talk or whisper to me, but being in the presence of the sea does help us hear the whispers of our own inner wisdom, doesn't it? And when we look out at the sea, we almost automatically grow more calm and contemplative. And at the same, we also feel more deeply connected to something outside and beyond ourselves, an awakening of sorts to the sheer vastness and intricacies of nature. As Jacques Cousteau once said, "The sea, once it has cast its spell, holds one in its net of wonder forever." Yes, the sea is an incredible teacher. She reminds us that life is not at all easy, that storms are inevitable, and that we can get lost if we don't have compasses and buoys and lighthouses in our lives, both literally and figuratively. And when you stop to think about it, you can actually learn a lot about life by simply observing her waves. There are the dangerous waves, the ones that you may or may not see coming. These are the ones that can threaten to destroy us if we don't do something. Maybe it's an addiction in our lives or in the lives of our child. Maybe it's health symptoms that we can no longer ignore. Or maybe it's the menacing wave of white supremacy and Nazism that is growing in strength in our country. As any observer of the sea will tell you, one of the best strategies for surviving these types of waves is to move. For if we simply stand there, we will experience its full force, and it will crash down on us, spinning us and disorienting us, knocking us off our feet. It can even threaten our survival. But what any sea creature will demonstrate is that the best strategy for surviving such waves is to take a deep breath or two and then dive below the wave into that calm that always precedes it. And by this I mean to dive deep into the calmest inner core of ourselves before trying to pop back up to the surface. For example, confronting the type of hate currently gaining momentum, it requires a certain type of stillness, even as we move. So let me be clear, by stillness, I don't mean inactivity. I mean a calmness that is grounded in our fiercest love of beauty, of kindness, and justice. Thich Nhat Hanh might call it engaged compassion. But then there are also those times when the waves come in such force and in such fast succession that there is little time to dive deep. We lose our job, and then our housing, and then our relationship, all in quick succession. Or we get diagnosed with a life-threatening disease just as we've lost our health insurance, or our loved one dies, and we feel that we will surely drown from wave after wave of emotion, sorrow, anger, regret, fear, guilt. There is no calm spot between these kinds of waves, nor is there popping up unscathed on the other side of them, for these are the stormiest times of our lives, the hurricanes. And what we need in order to survive these SOS times is each other. a fellowship community, for example, and a good circle of supportive friends, or a facilitated grief group, or support group led by people who care, or perhaps a new medical routine, or a loan even. Still others might need to join an ALPS class, the perfect lifeline for new connections and new perspectives. Or we may simply need someone who will journey with us, someone who will listen and help us feel that we're not going through it all alone. But whatever your need or strategy, the ocean reminds us that the storms are an inevitable part of life, which is one of the reasons why we gather in community here. Is it not to help hold each other steadfast through these storms and to create a place of refuge for one another? Thankfully, the ocean also shows us that there are benign waves in life, the ones that we can just lay back on with our chins tipped skyward, maybe sporting a wetsuit. During these times, we are able to enjoy the gentle bobbing up and down of the soothing, rolling waves, and we feel so supported and relaxed and upheld that we could stay on the sea for hours. There is no fear or struggle for survival, just an inner sense of peace. We find the right partner, or the perfect home, or job, or spiritual practice, or social justice group. Yes, watching the gentle rolling waves of the sea reminds us that there are times in our lives to trust, to open up, and to relish the beauty of humanity. And lastly, there are those waves out on the horizon that intrigue us and capture our attention. There's something about them that speaks to us, and so we can't help but watch them. Sometimes the lure of these waves is so great that we actually want to go out and swim to them and then turn around and sink our forces with them. When we catch these waves, we feel like we're in the zone. We're surfing, and it is thrilling to feel the energy of being seemingly propelled from behind. And we discover that with very little effort, we're able to ride that amazing wave all the way to shore. And that, my friends, is precisely the kind of wave that brought me to you. Now, some of you may have heard that my decision to apply for this position came rather quickly, and so I want to explain how that all happened. I had loved my work at First Unitarian Church of Portland, but in recent years, the ministerial staff was being restructured, and so I decided that it was time for me to leave. Following my resignation, I directed a domestic violence program, and it was good and important work, but it wasn't the same. I missed being part of a liberal religious community. I was successful. I helped bring the agency back from the brink of fiscal destruction, but although that was satisfying, it didn't bring me a lot of joy. But I resigned myself to sticking with it because that's what good sports do. Are you seeing a pattern here? They hang in there and do the right thing. But then, one night, I dreamt of the sea. It is nighttime, and there's no wind, and the temperature is just right. I'm standing at the water's edge, and I'm looking down at my feet, watching the waves lapping over them. And I suddenly see something sparkling, something shining, and it's being reflected in the receding waves. It draws my eyes upward, and there, not far off the beach, is a lighthouse. But unlike most lighthouses, which, you know, their lights go in a circular fashion, this one is just focused on me, right? So this is a significant dream, and it wakes me up, and I decide to get up and ponder it. Now, I've done enough dream work to know that the sea usually symbolizes one's unconscious, and that when one is standing at the edge looking out over the sea, one is usually trying to find oneself. And so it didn't take me long to figure out that I was struggling with my identity. Was I still a minister? Was I fulfilling the call of my vocation by being a director of a nonprofit? And somehow, in the process of all of this pondering, I felt a sudden impulse to explore ministry possibilities. So I went to the UU website, and I saw that there was a long list of opportunities. And I started looking at them and going down, and some of them were in coastal communities, which piqued my curiosity, but something distinctly different happened when I laid my eyes on the name of this congregation. Something so different that it made me stop looking at the other ones. It was a word that I could feel forming within me, and the word was yes. But then I noticed that I just missed the deadline. Oops. But, you know, when you have a dream like this, you have to take it seriously, right? And so I wrote to Dan, and I said, is there any chance that you would consider looking at my resume and cover letter, even though the application date has passed? And he said that that they would be willing to look. It wouldn't be for a while because they'd had some candidates that didn't pan out, and they were all going on vacation. So so I probably wouldn't hear from them for a month, but I got a call the next day, and they asked if I would be willing to be interviewed. So I swam out to this compelling wave that seemed to be calling out to me. And I turned around and rode it all the way to the shores of Port Townsend. Now, part of me wishes I could tell you a different story, that I actually researched all of the possibilities and I went to all the websites and checked them all out and discerned that this was the best possible match for me and the best possible match for you, but it wasn't like that. It was much easier and faster than that, which explains why I chose that particular Longfellow poem as our reading this morning, because in that poem, Longfellow too is awakened in the night by a voice out of the deep, and he refers to the phenomenon as the rushing of the sea tides of the soul. And while its memories, murmurings may be beyond our reason and our control, he reminds us that we need to listen to them anyway. So here I am, heeding the guidance of the rushing sea tides of my soul, and I stand before you now, ready to take the next steps with you as your new assistant minister. Now, it's very clear to me. It happened almost immediately. It started with the meeting with Dan and then with the selections committee and then coming into this place. But it didn't take me long to realize that you have built something very special here. There's a lightness and openness here that softens the heart and stimulates the mind. There's a solid hand-hewn strength here that can offer comfort and protection from all of the storms, those raging outside and those raging within our own interiors. And underlying it all, there is this quiet stillness, a wise silence that calls us to give in and give over and draw strength from that which is so much bigger than us. Tangible, yet infinite. This wise silence, what Emerson calls the soul of the whole, is especially present here, and I feel spiritually connected to it. But what does she mean by spiritual, you may be asking yourselves? First off, let me tell you that I think that we spend far too much time trying to define or explain spirituality. But still, I am a minister, and what I believe matters. So people naturally and frequently ask me to define my spirituality. When I do, I oblige folks by talking about my non-binary place on the theist humanist spectrum and my bent for transcendentalism. But then I always have to say that the words that I've shared are just pointing to the reality of my understanding of spirituality. They don't actually name it. It's because spirituality to me is an experience. It's active. So just as you can't understand the wind by reading about it, you have to feel it, right? So is it with spirituality? You know it when you feel it, as during the miracle of birth and the mystery of death, or during the solace of solitude, or the despair of loneliness. It is that which emerges within us when we are awed by beauty, like all the beauty of Port Townsend, but also by the ugliness that we see when we view the bombed out houses of Syria. It can be experienced while listening to the splendid instruments of an exquisite symphony, but also in the haunting cries of a hungry child. Spirituality, then, is both the flower and the compost heap. And I feel a spirituality here within this physical place and in this community of seekers of which I am now a part. It is my hope that together, anchored by faith, hope, and courage, we can amplify our collective vision of equity, justice, and sustainability. Because, let's face it, our world is hurting and sick right now, and we along with it. Unchecked greed and hatred are having a field day that threatens all that we hold sacred. Our message of radical love and inclusion may be the only antidote strong enough to bring us and our world back into harmony and balance. I thank goodness that I have washed up on this shore, this place where we don't have to check our minds at the door in order to feel the power inherent in community. Even for heady individuals like us, this fellowship offers an opportunity to connect with each other and also with a sacred, mysterious power. It is among us when we sing. It is among us when we meditate or hold silence. It is among us when we gather for worship or for coffee or to plan the next social justice event. It is everywhere, within us, among us, beyond us. This wave I've ridden in on, and the selections committee, and my dear colleague Bruce, have brought me to you, for which I am incredibly grateful. I know you're entering a transition, and each part of this transition will have its own waves. I don't know what this will mean for me, for you, for us, but I sure am looking forward to the ride. As we explore these new waters together, let us remember that, like waves on the ocean, we come from the same source, that within us exists a connection to the sacred evolutionary impulse, that creative force from which all life emerges. What is its name? Its name is love, and it will be our lifeline through all that comes our way. Amen.
Thank you.